Hello again and welcome to the Centred Install podcast series. It's been a while, I must confess. The last podcast we recorded was back in September for our exhibition EI Live, which I'm pleased to report was a rip-roaring success. As I'm sure you know by now, our Essential Install podcasts have not only been dedicated to specific industry topics, but we've also covered subjects such as integrated turn distributor and the effect lighting has on our well-being with Dr. Shelley James, an extremely interesting podcast, I have to say. Incidentally, all our podcasts are available on the Essential Install website, essentialinstall.com, and you'll find them all there. So, for today's podcast, we're joined by Colin Urey, co-founder of Gallo Acoustics, who will tell you they don't make ordinary speakers. Welcome, Colin.
Hi, David. Thank you very much. Very excited to be here.
Also, as usual, we're joined by Dan Sate, our editor-in-chief and editor of Essential Install magazine. Welcome, Dan.
Yeah, good to be back again. And one of my pet companies, I guess, a long sort of awareness of these speakers. So it's great to have an opportunity to talk about them and what they bring to the industry.
Thanks, Daniel.
Well, the last time I saw Dan was at the recent CD Awards, of course, as Dan will recall. And towards the end of the evening, the mouth seemed to be working, but the words coming out didn't make any sense at all.
Well, I don't think I'd been on my own in that category, but I think we enjoyed it. We had a good time. My hotel, I don't normally get a hotel. I used to get picked up, but luckily the hotel was literally opposite the venue. So all I had to do was like fall out of the venue and I was virtually in my hotel. So
Did they let you in, Dan?
Well, they must have done. I woke up in there, so
they must have thought it was safer to let him in than just leave him where he was lying on the doorstep.
Well, let me tell you, Colin, Dan waking up in a hotel after a night like that is a bit of a bonus.
As long as I'm inside, it's a bonus.
In fact, on that note, I would add that Colin clearly is fresh from the CD Awards, having picked up the Best Trade Supplier for the second year running. Congratulations again, Colin. I guess you must be bowled over.
Yeah, thank you. It's amazing. Yeah, winning it last year was a huge surprise. And for us, the fact it's voted by our customers have voted for us. For us, that means a huge amount. I've got them sitting proudly on display just above my head. Yeah, we absolutely bowled over is the word, and just committed, really try not to let it go to our heads and just get back to doing what we did, I think, to achieve them in the first place. You know, we worked very, very hard, especially during lockdown when it wasn't easy, and to have these two awards, both of which were voted for during lockdown, effectively various lockdowns, that it means the world. It really does.
Especially the people you're competing against for that particular award. You know, you've got the biggest distributors, of course, as you know, in the business, and you come out trumped 2 years running. It's fantastic.
Yeah, some pretty big players. I was not walking into it with complete confidence. We know, obviously, it's a small industry. We know everybody very well. We know the level of service that our competition for the awards give to their customers and how much they're loved by their customers. So sitting at the table, having finished dessert on that Thursday night, we were really not expecting it. So yeah, phenomenal.
No, brilliant. Well done. I've always thought that Gallo is a very interesting company. As I understand, Anthony Gallo designed the first speaker at the tender age of 14 with the first commercially available product available in 1994. Now you've got, by my estimation, 46 distributors worldwide. What a brilliant success story. Colin, how do you manage 46 worldwide distributors?
By a lot of communication, probably. So when we bought the Gallo Acoustic brand from the Americans in 2016, and at that point it was still a bit of a hi-fi brand and with a bit of CI on the side. And the way the hi-fi market has gone to being very much two-channel vinyl, very, very expensive, we decided it was time to give a real focus onto the CI market. So we've done that tirelessly since 2016 and gradually grown the international business. And also not having, at that point, certainly myself, not having a complete understanding of the industry, it was a lot of trial and error, a lot of appointed distributors who were not quite right, inheriting a handful from the old Gallo, keeping them, a situation where we actually ended a relationship with one and then went groveling back after 6 months and said we made a huge mistake. So for us, it's the personal relationships. We have regular correspondence. We have a fantastic team here. And it goes back to the award thing. they are what keep us going. So if an email comes in from an international distributor, we're hot on it and just continuing to give the best possible service.
Just out of interest, do you leave them to their own devices in terms of marketing themselves in their own country, or do you have a hand in that?
Yeah, we email them every week. They get an email from me every Monday morning with everything we've been up to, images, videos, and just giving them as much information as we can. And it's up to them what we do. We don't have an export manager. I wear that cap for half the week. So we're not going to them with spreadsheets asking how the numbers are doing. As long as we believe that they're looking after the brand and that they want to grow it, then we leave them to it and just give them as many assets as we can to let them move on.
What's your top three countries, Colin? UK's got to be up there high, I'm guessing.
UK's high, but it's remarkably come down. So the business has grown solidly, constantly, since 2016.
But that's globally, presumably?
Both. But the percentage, at the beginning, obviously, we were hugely reliant on the UK. It was a massive percentage of our revenue. And that shrunk right down to, I think it's below 30% now because of these other 40-odd countries that have come in. Big countries for us, so the regular countries, we do a lot in India, China, in Europe we do a lot, Sweden, the Benelux is a strong country. USA is a big export market, where we don't have a distributor for the US, we supply the US directly, order by order from the UK, just as we do for the UK customers. And that it works really, really well, not having a distributor.
So how do you promote yourselves in the US then? Word of mouth, of course, is very potent, but... What do you do? I'm interested in that part of the business. But how do you get the Gallo name around over there? Or is it well established anyway? I guess
it's not as established as we thought it was on day one. Buying the American business, we just thought, well, we'll turn the tap on and the orders will come in. And that didn't happen. It took another couple of years of blood, sweat, and tears. We exhibited at two CEDIA expos in San Diego, and we should have been doing further ones. And we had an agent basically there for a few years, or for the first couple of years. And then we made the decision that we needed to give the level of service that we were giving to the UK. So we investigated it, actually spoke to Ollie at Future Automation, a guy I'd never spoken to. I didn't know him. And he just, and I called him up. An introduction was made and I called him up and he just explained how they got started in that market. And it was absolutely incredible. So we focus on social media, we find the dealers, we target them, we bring them on board one by one. And if a customer, if an installer in New York places an order today, he's getting it tomorrow in New York and it's shipped from Scotland. Yeah, if it's Los Angeles or the central belt area, then it's 2 to 3 days. But we're basically giving a level of service as if we had an office in America, but we're doing it from Scotland. And we can do that because rather than giving a margin to the distributor for America, we basically give that to United Parcel Service and they deliver it. But that works well. No interest in doing it anywhere else. So we have the UK and the USA, we are direct. And every other country, we either have or are in the process of appointing a single exclusive international distributor.
I think it makes sense, doesn't it? And I'm guessing it's the same in the UK. If I put an order in now, I'm going to get it tomorrow morning, am I?
Yep, you will. You will. Next day delivery. And if it's a custom, even custom colours, we're turning them around in 7 to 10 days at the moment. You can give us a RAL colour or a Pantone colour and we're hot on it.
Are they all on a Pantone colour, your speakers?
We have about 15 standard colours in the range and they're all kind of derivatives of a Pantone or a RAL colour, but they're actually unique. We kind of tweaked it so they're unique to us. But
if so none of your colours then are out of CMYK?
No, none of them are off the shelf library colours. However, if you phoned us up just now and told us a RAL or a Pantone or a Faro and Ball or a Dulux or whatever, I mean, you try us with anything. That's part of the fun, is we get all sorts of stuff in. We will match it. And today's Thursday, so we'd probably be shipping that to you by next Friday.
Wow! So you can mix and come up with any colour requested.
Pretty much, we try our best. We had one 2 weeks ago, and it was to match. I can't remember the name of the wine. It's a common brand of wine. And on the top, it's a screw top bottle. And the top, they have a kind of burgundy red. You see it in the supermarkets.
And yeah, I don't drink, Colin, so I wouldn't know.
No, I've seen that. I've seen that, David. So one of our installers asked us if we could match it. I said, absolutely. So I jumped in the car and drove to Tesco and bought the bottle. And we did a physical match, physical colour match. Because that's fun. That's more fun than just doing another RAL colour, because it's a challenge.
Where do you mix the paint? Silly question.
We have a local painter who do all the codes here. We source the paint ourselves, and then it's outsourced to somebody local who was within a few miles of here. And he's pretty much full-time Gallo on painting.
Love it. What's on the horizon? Anything new, Colin, on the horizon for 2022? You've got some super new colours?
Yeah, we've got a lot of different things coming, some of which is confidential because we have some new models coming that I'm hoping we can share at ISE Barcelona to begin with. And then, of course, the big UK show, which is EI Live.
I was hoping you'd mention that, actually.
You know we're a big fan. So we've got some new products, and in addition to that, new colours, new bracketry, and we've been dabbling in the lighting industry with our Gallo droplet light. So for the last few months, we collaborated with a really high-end lighting designer called Stone Lighting. They're a factory in Edinburgh, and we approached them because we were continuously being asked to find lights that matched our pendant speakers. So we'd be Googling Italian brands and Danish brands and just recommending stuff. So the easiest option was let's just make one that matches it, because it will actually match. So
makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So we have a Gallo Lights as part of a collaboration, and that's just been, we've just been dipping our toe in the water. And actually we had stock for a few months, and I couldn't really work out how to present it to everybody. You put social media images up, but you needed to really, we're a speaker brand and it's a collaboration. We're not trying to suddenly become a lighting brand. And it was EI Live where it was the first chance to actually speak to people face to face, people who install these day to day. And that kind of reignited. We had a conversation and we just appointed loads of showrooms at the point. We said you could have it at a crazy price, put it into your showroom, install it, connect it to whatever control system you're using. Tell us the problems, tell us the challenges, because we need to understand it, but we can't do that from reading a book. We need to have first-hand feedback from the guys who put lights in. So we've been doing that since that started at EI Live and all the way through, and feedback and questions, and it's been great. And we're now in a position where we can move on to the next stage and say, right, what is the Gallo lighting range going to be?
Well, it's like our company. I'm a great believer in things evolving, and clearly your innovation, your innovative style, you know, from an evolving point of view, is what keeps you out there to the fore. It's amazing. It's a really niche product, isn't it? I think it's great.
Yeah, it really is. And that's part of the fun as well. I remember in the early days thinking, oh, I wish we could have the volumes of the in-ceiling speaker guys. I wish we were doing those quantities. But that, for me, that would be hellish, because you are competing. You're competing on service or margin or whatever it takes. For us, we just, when we appoint a new installer, we just say, we're here when you want us. There's no pressure. We're not asking for monthly or quarterly spend. When the project comes up that's right for Gallo, we're here and we're not going to hassle you. You're not going to hear anything from us. There's no sales calls. We're here when you're ready. And then it becomes our job to put as many pretty images in front of every social media platform as we can, because that's the only way that they'll remember Gallo. And that's how we've grown the business.
I do like your marketing, because there's only so much, forgive me when I say this, but there's only so much you can do with a ball on a stick. But the marketing and the effort you put into that is, I think, it's tremendous. It's commendable, I think.
Thank you. We've built a great community of people here, also the people we collaborate with, the media guys, but also our installers who come to us with ideas. And that just gives us such a wealth of content. It's been really, really fun.
Good source of feedback, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. And they're not shy.
Dan, as it's one of your pet companies,
there is a good reason for this, and it's interesting. Earlier on, we were talking sort of briefly about the brand being a hi-fi brand. Originally, that was kind of how people knew it, and I think one of the first times I encountered it was a Bristol hi-fi show. Many moons ago.
On what year? Do you remember the year?
Oh, no, I don't remember last week, so I can't do years.
Well, long time ago. CD Awards was a bad example.
So, and I was working on writing about hi-fi mostly at the time, And I was just starting to get into this thing called custom install and thinking, you know, this is a very interesting area. This is where potentially the audio industry is going to go. I find it, you know, more interesting. I hope I get to write a bit more about this kind of things. And I remember sort of talking about the brand at the show and sort of saying, you know, yeah, it's a hi-fi product. It's a great product. But what about this new kind of installation market? It's an absolute shoe-in for that because of the way it looks. It looks different. It sounds good. It's not a novelty product in the sense that it's not a proper audio product. They've always sounded good. But then it has these added aesthetic abilities that it's always had because of the shape. But you folks have really, really kind of, you know, gone to town on that with all the colors and all the different kind of options and things you've got now. So it's almost kind of like, in terms of audio and in terms of the custom install market, when we're now so concerned about attracting, you know, interior designers, not just end users that like the products, but, you know, working with interior designers and other trades that see something different, see something that they can appreciate. You know, you meet the odd, you know, architect or interior designer that likes their audio, that's into audio. Most of them aren't, because not what they trained in, but they did train in aesthetics and how things are put together in ergonomics. And I've spoken to quite a few that they just love those speakers. They go, well, look at that. It's beautiful. Even before you turn it on. So I like what's happened with the brand, you know, over the last, well, all of its life really, but I really like what you've done with it and what you really run with the CI potential of it, because that's what I always thought, you know, going back 15 years or whatever, this brand, these speakers, they're made this new emerging market. And now, you know, now we're sort of, dare I say it, we're sort of past being an emerging market. You know, we've been an emerging market for 20 years and now it's a real thing. People have heard of us. I mean, the question I was going to ask, I guess, is where do you think the potential is for the brand? I know you don't want to be doing like massive amounts of volumes. It's not that sort of setup, but in terms of where you go next, what are your plans in terms of sort of, obviously you've got lots of fans in the installer world. Are you reaching out to architects, interior designers in the same way?
That's the kind of holy grail. It's the bit we're not, certainly it's my responsibility to do, and I'm barely doing it at the moment, and it's sitting there, and I'm in touch with a few exhibitions and trade bodies and stuff on the architectural side of things. I feel like we're missing a trick, and some of our distributors around the world are very good at it. They're in at the source. They're in with the interior designers, in with the architects, and that pulls the products through. So that's one of my big challenges for 2022 is, okay, let's get back to the start of the project where somebody is specifying audio and lighting, and at the moment they're mostly doing lighting. A lot of the audio is left to the last minute, but we need to get in front of these people so that by the time we're speaking to an installer, there's already been three people in the chain, but Gala was there at the beginning. And I know other brands in the UK that do it very, very well. And they pretty much have a people appointed for that task. But now that we're established, now that we have our network and we have our community and the products, it's now time for us to kind of get to source. And it's something I just need to really roll my sleeves up and stop putting it off.
Yeah, it's not easy. But I think what has changed in the last few years, we always used to have these conversations about, you know, the conflict between, you know, installers and other trades like interior designers. And there was this kind of, well, how do you persuade the interior designer that, you know, 12 feet speakers in each corner of the room are not going to interfere with their concept for the room at all. It's fine. And I think we have got, there are times to kind of like put your foot down, I guess, but I think we have got better as an industry at actually communicating and working with other industries better and trying to, rather than trying to beat them around the head and neck and tell them that the audio and video and all the other great things they do are more important than what they're doing. It's more of a kind of a collegiate response where you're kind of going, well, your project is going to be better. The customer's going to have more of what they want. And, you know, it's not going to interfere with what you're doing. In fact, it's going to make it better because, you know, that lovely gold colour you've got it on the walls in terms of the, you know, the wallpaper, the expensive flock wallpaper for £48 a foot. You can have a speaker that's exactly the same colour. How cool is that? And so, you know,
not getting too technical. That's a problem. You can bamboozle these guys because their audio is not their interest. So you're really just kind of selling the sizzle, not the sausage. You're just saying, yeah, you can mimic that color, you can match that color, you can contrast that color, but let's not get into the nitty-gritty of how great home automation is, because that's not their department.
Yeah, I think this is what I was trying to get at a minute ago. We try to persuade people about the advantages of this and this and this great. They don't care because it isn't what they trained to do. So, but what they do care about is how things look, how things work. Does it fit in with, you know, the vision I've sold to the client? And once you can start doing that, then they start getting interested and they start listening. And then maybe, you know, a little bit further down the line, they do start thinking about, well, actually, you know, this is making my customer happy. I'm probably maybe the first point of contact for them. So if they're experiencing something that they enjoy and it makes them happy, I'm getting half the credit for that. So that's all good.
It never ceases to amaze me the conversations we have. And I've had quite a few this week with regard to interior designers. You know, the interior designers, what relationship they have with our industry. And I think they should have a relationship. I'm guessing that's one area, because your product, Colin, to me, is very much interior design. It fits in there. And I would have thought that interior designers per se would actually welcome you with open arms. But you say you haven't yet conquered that world yet. Well, none of us have. But I mean, are you focusing on interior design associations, things like that, and interior designers specifically?
Yeah, so we have a good number. We're connected with a good number of interior designers around the world, and every week new ones come on because a client has gone to them and suggested Gallo. But for me, that just shows us what we're missing.
How do you work with them then? Does an interior designer come to you direct? Does an interior come to you via an installer?
It's both. There's some trust issues as well. You know, the installer has to be confident that the interior designer is not trying to make a cut from the speakers. Everyone gets paid to do their job along the way. So, and they've got to trust us as well. The installer or the distributor has to trust that we can have a, same as an end user, we can have a conversation with an interior designer and it doesn't compromise their position in the commerce of it. So, yeah, we get inquiries weekly from interior designers or installers who have brought in their interior designers or end users with their interior designers. And it's a basic thing. You're just trying to be as helpful as you can and really work out what the challenge is and how we can help them overcome it. But for me, we're just scraping the surface of that. I think it's hugely untapped for the industry. And we're probably one of the best positioned brands to do it because of what we offer.
Magazine is the leading title for the smart home, AV and home cinema markets. Packed monthly with news, views, features, products and case studies, it's a must read for any integration company looking to source new products and increase their profits. If you'd prefer to get your smart home and high quality AV news online, then get along to essentialinstall.com. Updated daily with news, product releases and case studies. Essential Install is the last word in smart home, AV and home cinema coverage. Don't miss out. Stay up to date with Essential Install in print and online.
Let me pick up on a word, concept. I notice you've got the new Gallo T-shirt concept. Quite sure what the concept is. Does it have speakers hanging on it or something, or do they slot in the pockets? I mean,
it's just us keeping the merchandise coming for our installers. There seems to be a pride in working with us, and whether it's the Gallo beer or the Gallo gummy bears or Gallo clothing, that's amazing. That means a huge amount. And we just want to keep it. We want to keep shaking it up. So we've got a lovely new design for a T-shirt and probably a hoodie that we'll bring out in January, and just something a bit different and something that's not as much corporate wear. Again, people like HD Anywhere do a pretty good job, not corporate wear, and we just have to keep plugging away.
That's half the battle, isn't it? It's brand awareness. It's keeping that brand to the fore. I think we do that quite well, but you are exceptional at it, I have to say.
I do like the apparel angle as well. I mean, you know, as you know, I love my self-branded T-shirts with the Absolutely. Rock bands, and you know,
no one does it. No one does it better than you.
cross-pollinating between our brand and the things that are associated with the brand, you know, music, films, whatever. And they really do work, you know, as a way of communicating, I think. And if you can wear something, it just adds a level of personalization that you don't get from looking at a logo or whatever. And,
yeah.
And you know, obviously the guys are on site a lot, and it's just useful to have something to wear
that, yes,
you know, is practical and but also says something about you and what, where you are in the market and what you're into. It's just a nice thing to have.
I'm just delighted that Gallo employees want to be Gallo branded, let alone the people who are paying to put Gallo into our installation. That blows my mind. That's one stage further.
Branding is very important, though, isn't it? It's a great pet subject of mine, branding. Branding's so powerful if you do it, in fact, many of the ways that you're doing it, it's so powerful you can apply good branding to a good product, bad product or ugly product. But that, you know, good branding will always see you through.
Oh, we have this challenge a lot. You bring on a new installer, a new distributor. Yeah, so somebody who's not experienced the Gallo product, who have come to us because of the brand and say something's time critical, and they say we need speakers for installation, but we've never heard them, we've come to you because we know the brand. And you just have to say, you just got to trust us, because the product is still there. The product is what's making it happen. The product is solid and it's better than people expect. And I spend my life saying to new installers, just put them in, trust us. We know how much people love them. And if anybody doesn't, we'll pick them up. We'll immediately pick them up and refund you. And that's the danger of having a brand where the product doesn't stand up. For us, you can ship out boxes of speakers in absolute confidence because of that.
Totally agree. Well, on another note, I can't let the opportunity go by without mentioning, of course, if you don't mind, Colin, our show, EI Live. I think you've probably been with us from the start, I think. Pretty much the first one or two exhibitions, maybe the first one you were with us. How did it go for you this year? Were you quite pleased with what went on there?
It was great. It was great. So for me, the big turning point was when it moved to Farnborough. And so that was 2019, and it became this proper UK stamp of a show. You know, it was the ISE Amsterdam carbon copy in the UK, and I felt so sorry for you guys that you couldn't then put it on 12 months later. It just seemed so unfair that you'd made this milestone, a huge, presumably huge risk, huge investment for that jump from the race course to Farnborough, and then this comes and deals you that blow. So to then a further 12 months down the line, and for the likes of Snap, Control 4 joining the show, for me, that's what would have happened in 2020 and is what deserved to happen. And we love it. We love the show. I was there myself pretty much because Stephen here was down with COVID.
Yes.
But because it's the UK, yeah, but because of the industry, it's such a great, you could never do that at ISE because you can't have a situation where you have an empty stand or there's people lining up to talk to you. But you know you can, and again, taking people from the office would have been a bad idea because it would have dropped our service levels. So I turned up at the show and we got some help for build up and help for breakdown. But knowing that the show is full of like-minded community, people from this industry, and it was fabulous, absolutely brilliant.
I'm going to ask an obvious question, but just out of interest, do you sell at the show? Do you sign orders at the show? We encourage people to come to the show and place orders. But of course, that doesn't always happen. But that's the same all over the world with exhibitions.
For us, we don't sell ever to anyone, if you know what I mean.
So it's the brand awareness and the product.
Yeah, yeah. If we were selling it white in ceiling speakers, or we were selling AVRs, so I've got my AVR and next door stand has their AVR, but I'll give you 5% off if you order at the show because you're going to use them all. You can take stock. Gallo is different. We don't want people to be sitting on stock. We want them to order the right colours, the right brackets, the right spec when they need it. So there is no selling. And that's what's worked for us because we put it all out and we wait for people to come to us. So EI was just a chat with, and if you bring on new customers, and we did, but I didn't turn up to Farnborough expecting to appoint new installers because I think we've got them all. And then you go to the show and realise you haven't. You're fooling yourself. But for me, it's just about being with the people who are dealing with Gallo day to day and chatting with them. And I mean, I had these grand ideas when we finished. I thought we could just put picnic. We could actually, for a while, it was funny. For a while, it was looking like we might not be able to do the show because if Stephen can't do it, and we're I think that month was our biggest month in history as well from a sales point of view. So I thought we can't attend, and I was joking. I said we could turn up with Gallo beer and Gallo bears and picnic tables and just chat to people, because for me that's what it was about. It was about just being with the community. But again, that would look really arrogant. If you remember Sonos at CEDIA San Diego, who booked an enormous space and just put an A board up to say, if you're interested, come and find our showroom. I didn't want a Sonos situation. So we decided to make it all happen.
There is a certain amount of arrogance with that, but if you could pull it off, it's fantastic. But I'm not risk averse, as you know, but I'm not too sure whether I'd try something like that.
I think you need to be really in the industry before you try it.
I think you have to be Apple or Facebook.
Yeah.
So how's business now, Colin? I'm assuming that. We were all concerned going back. We don't want to go back in time, but going back to the lockdown and the pandemic and everything else that happened in the last 18 months, 2 years, did your business, we all feared that business, of course, would drop off a cliff, but it didn't seem to. And then after the second lockdown, the first lockdown, I think people thought it was a holiday. Second lockdown, it seemed to motor and people did much, much better after the second lockdown. The business just went literally vertical. What was it like with you guys? Presumably your business was still continuing right way through the lockdown, was it?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I remember it really vividly. So as you said, the first lockdown happens, and you predicted it even before the announcement was made. We'd taken the kids out of school 2 days before Boris's announcement because it was coming. And at that point, you were actually fearful of catching COVID because you didn't know what the implications were. Then lockdown happens, and then you think, okay, business might literally stop overnight, and you've got overheads. There was a couple of weeks where the business went very, very quiet. And then after 2 weeks, things started coming back quite quickly, and we said, right, actually, now's the time to double down. And we got back on it, and we were doing ridiculous shifts during lockdown. We were spending more time and energy and money on content creation. All the big guys furloughed their entire marketing team. There was no social media posts from the big American guys. No posts for weeks. And we went right on it. And yeah, we had solid growth. So 2020, we had a 50% growth on 2019. And 2021 is currently about 65-70% up on 2020. So it was trying to juggle the growth as well, which is quite tough doing it all remotely. And then there's periods of time where we had kids. So Stephen had his kids at home. I've got my kids at home. Our partners are both trying to work. So that was fun. But you could sleep at night because the business was not just continuing, it was growing rapidly. So you weren't actually worried about keeping a roof over your head, for us anyway.
So apart from the marketing, you were shifting product as well?
Oh, yeah.
And then after the second lockdown, to me, our company was the same. We didn't furlough anybody, but first lockdown, we were concerned, but we just ploughed through. We published our magazine. Our revenues probably were down, I don't know, 50, 60, 60%, but we could handle that. So getting through that first lockdown and the second lockdown, business just literally took off.
It went
almost from zero to 100 mile an hour in a very short space of time.
Yes, it did. We employed a couple of people in September, two or three people in September last year, just to help deal with the kind of day-to-day, the order processing, building. So we were kind of accidentally ready for that. We just staffed up just in time for the next growth, which we didn't really expect to happen. So suddenly everyone was manically busy like we were before these new staff members, but everyone was busy and all the new guys were as well. And we started having record months. So February was a record month, then April, then July. It just continued to happen through this year.
It's incredible when you think about it, isn't it? This industry got through it, which was brilliant, thank heavens.
Yeah, I think our industry is, that's the thing. We can't pat ourselves on the back too much because the whole industry had this amazing experience. And I didn't speak to anyone who was really down about it. I think that's luck. It was just, do you know what I mean? If we were in the restaurant business and you were running a restaurant magazine, then we'd be having a very different conversation. It was just luck.
I'd be selling speakers by now and you'd be publishing magazines.
Yeah, exactly.
I think for me, what was really interesting about, you know, the whole situation, and, you know, obviously aspects of it were awful. You know, it was a pandemic, you know, it still is. But I've been working from home, sometimes feels like forever. And I've been trying to say to people,
Dan, you invented it.
Well, almost. And I've been trying to say to people for years that, you know, there are different ways of doing things. There are, you know, you don't always, I mean, having worked at some very large publishing houses, which were, you know, they're the real kind of like, we want, you know, we want bums on seats. We want hours. We want like figures that we can like take to our board and go, look, they're all working really hard. They're all rubbish at what they do and they're all miserable, but at least they're here. You know, that kind of attitude.
The presenteeism.
If anything good comes out of this whole sort of situation, I hope that it's people sort of realise that, you know, we always hear this phrase, and politicians use it all the time, hard-working families or hard-working people. Yeah. Well, why don't we just work? We don't necessarily have to work hard so we get ill and sick and miserable or whatever. You go to Scandinavian countries, not a blanket kind of thing, but they're a little bit better at this. They're kind of like, you know, they do less hours, but somehow they're more productive and in many cases more successful. So why is that? Well, I think it's because they have a slightly different attitude to what they do for a living. It doesn't define them. It's, this is what I do. But I'm also just as much a husband, a wife, a father, a friend. They're kind of better at mixing the two things together and coming out with a better result. So I hopefully, you know, as an industry, we've learned, you know, there are different ways of that we can do things that don't just have as good effect, but maybe even better.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I agree. I've got really fond memories of, like, personal memories of both all three lockdowns, I suppose, and their time, with, especially with young children, time you'll never get back again. And I think lockdown exposed a lot, and exposed us as to how we can handle the situation and if you're able to kind of get a lot out of it. And like I said, because the business was okay, because the business was strong underneath, it gave you this flexibility. Particularly like January, February lockdown this year, when it was beautifully cold and the sky seemed to be blue every day, just a rose-tinted specs. I've got very, very fond memories of it.
Overseas trips, Colin. Any planned? Do you get out to many of the distributors? Or I know your next overseas trip is probably ISE, isn't it? But what do you got planned?
Next will probably be, we'll go to CES over in Vegas. A kind of tradition that we've been doing that for a long time.
Do you exhibit there?
We did. We've only exhibited once. We did when we bought Gallo. It was the Venetian who've got the real high-end hi-fi. And then we quickly, then 30 days later, we did ISE and realised it was it's a fairground, you know. So we hadn't quite realised how great an exhibition or how the kind of alchemy of what we're trying to do, like Dan was saying, what we're trying to sell and the ISE industry, when it came together, we came back from that ISE with 36 countries wanting to sell our products. And that was, and there was no capacity for space at the show, so we had to book a little €1,000 in the Discovery Zone. Everybody has exactly the same, like 2 meters wide,
mm-hmm. and it's we just Wookie put, Alley.
Yeah, it was. It was exactly. We just turned up and put all our coloured speakers on the wall, and we won at one point. We had a queue of distributors. I won't say the brand, but they were all. A big brand in our industry, and all the distributors were calling each other up to say, come and get in line. It was unreal. So yeah, we exhibited at CES. It was obviously a very different show, because again, that's old American hi-fi.
No doubt you met 45 Elvises like we all do when we're out there.
Oh, absolutely. We got of our way to find them. But as far as trips to the distributors, not at the moment. I think if we had an export manager, then it'd be their job to do that. But I, at the moment, because we've got such personal relationships with all of our distributors and the new world of just doing, I would go weeks without being on a video call. I'm now having two or three a day. I don't think it's necessary. And actually, if I was to be traveling around, or one of us was to be traveling around meeting distributors, it would be bad for the business, because what are we then doing? What we'd be normally doing Monday to Friday isn't happening that week. So I'm quite happy with the setup, and we only have to visit if something happens or we're, yeah, somebody asks us to for a particular reason.
So when it was the American brand before you bought it, did they not distribute then globally, or were they just internal?
So we knew so the reason we were exhibiting at EI Live is because we had a business that is still established. It's that we have a sister company here, and that company was the UK Gallo distributor and for some of the European territories. And at that point, I mean, we've known Gallo since 2002. By the time we got the phone call to say Gallo's available to be acquired, the business was relatively low here. There wasn't much going on from a kind of branding marketing point of view or new product development or anything. So when we got the call, we realized, well, what are our skill sets, what we can do here, product design from our other businesses, marketing, brand building, let's apply that to this Gallo brand. And that's exactly what we've done. So we've known the speakers for a long time and the brand for a long time, and it's been under our ownership for the 5 years.
Brilliant. Well done. Great concept, Colin. You've done remarkably well. It's commendable. Well, that's about time. Listen out for the next in the EI Live podcast series, which leaves me to say thank you to Colin Urie from Gallo Acoustics.
Thank you.
Thanks to Dan Sait, of course.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And don't forget, Dan is your man for editorial inclusion in Essential Install magazine. Goodbye and have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Essential Install magazine podcast. Please subscribe to this podcast in your chosen podcast app so you never miss an episode. Stay up to date with Essential Install in print and online. Visit essentialinstall.com.